Chattering Mess is devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. We are one of the lone voices crying out in the wilderness, letting people know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to expose those who are working against our interest, to explain how they are doing so, why they are doing so. Because condemning such schemes isn't hateful, even when they are religious, political, and patriotic. It's scary. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to juxtapose Paul's poisonous pen to Yahweh's Torah, so that Christians might be released from its plague. If you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, you're invited to do so, 877-300-7645. Occasionally, I come across things that cause my jaw to drop. Occasionally, I read things that help to either reinforce that which I already knew or explain things that put the pieces together so that something very complicated all of a sudden becomes clear. That happened twice today already. The day is young, and yet it has occurred twice already today. The first of those two experiences was in the midst of writing what has become a 200-page analysis of Roman history. That occurred because in Daniel 7 and again in Daniel 8, Yahweh provides a revelation to his prophet that explains the a swath of world history as it affects the things that he cares about, which is his people, his land, his city, his Torah, his covenant, his children. And in that swath of history, he begins with Babylon, which is the mother of religious and political deceptions. It is the evil that Yahweh is saving us from when we attend his invitation to meet with him at Pesach and Matzah. And in this long review, prompted by Yahweh's damnation of all things Rome, he goes from Babylon to Persia to the Greek Empire of Alexander the Great, and transitions into Rome. But he says, you know, the Roman beast is not like all the other beasts. It's not only vastly more deceptive and vastly more deadly, but that beast never dies. That beast continues to live. That beast actually becomes the beast of the tribulation. That Rome itself is the model from, the well from which the Torahless one, and known to Christians as the Antichrist, emerges. And not just from the place, from the ideology. You see, the Republic of Rome became the Empire of Rome, which became the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church. And it is Christianity that is the well from which the tribulation will be poisoned. Now, the epiphany this morning happened to be in a analysis of a very interesting Roman emperor. And I'm just going to give you the summation of it. We'll go into it, I'm sure, in detail in a later day. But this particular emperor is shaped Europe for 1,000 years. He is the fellow that decided to make Christianity the official state religion of the empire. You see, that's not what Constantine did. Constantine created the only form of Christianity that is practiced today. You know, if you are a Christian, no matter the denomination, doesn't matter if you're Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, or a Protestant Christian, the form of the religion practiced today was conceived by Constantine. And it was conceived in the Council of Nicaea. But the religion didn't become mandated until a number of years thereafter, almost 400 CE, so about 80 years thereafter. And the man that imposed the religion did two things. One is he made anyone who didn't submit to Christianity a heretic who would be tortured and killed. But he also imposed the feudal system of lords and serfs. It's the very model that Christianity would follow throughout Europe for 1,000 years. And so the epiphany happened to be that while I understood the purpose of the Council of Nicaea, which was where Constantine ordered the bishops of the newly emerging church to gather for an express purpose, and the express purpose was to make their Iesus Christus a replacement for Yahweh. And it was that analysis that you say, ah, now I get it. It was the combination of Constantine creating Christianity based upon a man being the totality of God, and the fixation that Christians have now on their Jesus Christ, the Iesus Christos, as a replacement for the God of his Old Testament with their New Testament. That was all conceived in the Council of Nicaea in 325 BCE, but it was just an interpretation of the events, an errant interpretation. It's not how God is at all. Yahusha did not come for us to pay attention to him. He didn't come for us to worship him. He didn't come for us to pray to him. He didn't even come for us to acknowledge him. He came so that we could see through him to Yahweh. And so those who focus on him miss the entire purpose of his coming. But that view of him as the totality of God was conceived by Constantine at the Council of Nicaea in 325. But it wasn't imposed until 400 CE, when Christianity not only became the official religion of the empire, and it was Eastern Orthodox Christianity, but that form of Christianity is the only form of Christianity practiced today. If you go into a church today, it will focus on Jesus Christ as if the man was the totality of God, and all reverence will be to him. That was conceived at that time and imposed at that time, which is how the Rome, and this was the last year that Rome was unified. It broke apart at that point. But the unification point of Rome became the basis of the beast of the tribulation. Christianity is the source of the beast. Now, the other epiphany is a letter that emerged within the last couple of weeks. The article on this letter I stumbled upon, and maybe it was sent to me. I don't know how I came about it or if I just found it yesterday, but I think it was during the second or third hour of the show, during the commercial break. I was online searching my news feeds, and I came upon a story that so adroitly affirms America's stance in World War II. You know, many people view America as liberating Europe and freeing the Jews from the concentration camps. We had no interest in helping the Jews. America was anti-Semitic. Its leadership was anti-Semitic. America didn't care. And that's borne out by a letter that was written, and while it was always been acknowledged that the letter was written, the United States has always denied that it was received. Well, a copy of the letter was found, and the U.S. response to it. So let me share with you this story. It begins last month. 60 Minutes correspondent Bob Simon told the remarkable story of Sir Nicholas Winston, a stockbroker in London, who saved 669 Czechoslovakian children, most all of them Jewish, from the Nazis in World War II. England took in almost all of the 669 children. Winston, now 104 years old, told 60 Minutes that he had made a desperate plea for help to the United States back in 1939. He said that he had written a letter to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. No, 1939. United States wasn't involved in the war. The United States wouldn't engage in Europe until 1942, and even then, we lingered on the beaches of eastern England for a considerable period of time. I really didn't invade Europe until 44. So this is 1939, 5 years before that. He said that he had written a letter to Franklin Delano Roosevelt describing the plight of Czech children, this would be Jewish children, and asking that America grant refuge status to a number of them. Just simply take them in so they're not killed. Quote, but the Americans wouldn't take any, which is a pity, Sir Nick said in the 60-minute broadcast. We could have moved so many more out to safety. David Langbart, an archivist at the National Archives and Records Administration, happened to be watching 60 Minutes when the story aired. And he was struck by what Winston had to say. The man has an incredible amount of chutzpah, Langhart said in Yiddish. I thought this was an incredibly caring man who put himself on the line to help people he did not even know. So after seeing the story, Langbart decided to look for the evidence of Sir Nick's letter to FDR in the State Department records at the National Archives. He wanted to see if the man really did write the letter. He was convinced he did. He wanted to see, did the United States receive this letter? You know, I've written president letters. And typically, because it's right to the point. You have to be, if you're going to write the president a letter and you want a response, you better be succinct, to the point, and you better have some expertise in the area that you're talking about. And each time I've written the president a letter, I've always gotten a reply. Sir Nick got a reply, but verbally, not in writing, because the United States didn't want FDR, didn't want anything to do with this. It was, I think, inwardly embarrassed that he wasn't going to do anything to save these children. That these children could be sacrificed for all he cared, but he didn't want to have his name associated with their sacrifice. So this Cernick, he wanted to see, did his letter make it to the president? And if so, was he right in saying that the United States officially reneged, officially said, no, we aren't interested in trying to protect the lives of Jewish children? And so he worked at the National Archives, and lo and behold, he says, I came up with his original letter to President Roosevelt. The whereabouts of the document had been a mystery for almost 75 years. Vanessa Fika, the story's producer, says she got goosebumps when she learned of Langert's discovery. When Winston's scholars and even his own children were shocked when we told them the letter had been found, Fika tells 60 Minutes Overtime. I am grateful that Winston, now approaching the age of 105, will be able to see his letter for the first time in 75 years. Now, Winston's craft, that's his ability to write, is evident in the letter he wrote to Roosevelt. If you're going to write a president and you want a response, you've got to defer to their perceived dignity. He kept it poignant and respectful while conveying the sense of urgency. The letter is dated May 16, 1939. From this point, 6 million Jews and 6 million racial minorities would die in concentration camps. He writes, "Esteemed sir, perhaps people in America do not realize how little is being done and has been done for refugee children in Czechoslovakia. Remember, Neville Chamberlain gave Czechoslovakia, and I'm not reading from, full stop, Czechoslovakia. I'm going to make a comment. We'll go back to the letter. Remember, Czechoslovakia had been sacrificed to Adolf Hitler by Neville Chamberlain. He gave that which was not his to give, the high ground of Czechoslovakia, to the Nazis to appease them. Turned out to be the catalyst for the Second World War. Just as the United States is going to give the high ground of Israel, the West Bank, to the Muslims to appease them, it will be the catalyst for World War III. So he said, how little is being done for the refugee children in Czechoslovakia. The moment the Germans were given it, they began to round up and incarcerate Jews, including little Jewish children. They have to depend entirely on private guarantors to get into England, which means that somebody has to take full responsibility for maintenance, upkeep, and education until they are 18 years of age. So this man was spending his entire fortune, and with his entire fortune, he could afford by the English laws to bring in these 600 some odd children. But there were hundreds of thousands of them, and he needed someone else to help, a country to help. They have to depend almost entirely on private guarantors to get into England, which means that somebody has to take full responsibility for maintenance, upkeep, and education until they're 18 years of old. No other country is taking an interest in them except for Sweden, which took 35 children last February. We at this office have case papers and photos of over 5,000 children, quite apart from another 10,000 whom we estimate have to register. Actually, so far, we have only brought about 120 into England. 120 of 10,000. 35 of 10,000. Actually, of 15,000 is 5,000 plus 10,000. 155 of 15,000 children. So here is Nicholas Winston, a stockbroker in Britain. Don't give Britain any credit, by the way. Britain is doing nothing in this regard. This man is doing it all on his own. The rules were in Czechoslovakia, if you were going to bring a child out, you had to guarantee that you had the funds to pay for their maintenance, upkeep, and education until the time that they were 18 years of age. So it was probably in the range, back in that day, about $10,000 per child. There were 15,000 of them that this man knew of that he was trying to save. At this point, he had saved 120. Sweden had saved 35. There were 15,000 still there. They're all dead today. Well, they died shortly thereafter, all but another maybe 200 of them. He writes, in Bohemia and Slovakia today, there are thousands of children, many homeless and starving, mostly without nationality. But they certainly all have one thing in common. There is no future if they are forced to remain where they are. Their parents are forbidden work and the children are forbidden schooling. When you read forbidden, what do you think he's saying? And it was obvious to the reader of the letter at the time. Anyone who was reading this letter had read Mein Kampf at this time. Mein Kampf was among the most popular books in the world. And everyone knew that was Hitler's manifesto. And Hitler was, by 1939, he was in absolute control of Nazi Germany. The world was at war. And he knew that when they wrote, if they are forced to remain where they are, there is no future for them. Their parents are forbidden work and their children are forbidden schooling. It's because they're Jewish. And apart from the physical discomforts, which all of this signifies, the moral degradation is unmeasurable. Yet since Munich, hardly anything has been done for the children in Czechoslovakia. Many of the children are quite destitute and have had to move more than once since they originally fled from Germany. Is it possible for anything to be done to help us with this problem in America? It is hard to state our case forcibly in a letter. But we trust your imagination to realize how desperately urgent the situation is. Believe me, esteemed sir, with many thanks, your obedient servant, Nicholas Winston. Anti-Semitism was so popular in America. I mean, the hero of America, you know, in the time was an anti-Semite. Charles Lindbergh, raging anti-Semite. The ambassador to England at the time, Joseph Kennedy, raging anti-Semite. President of the United States, anti-Semite. Nicholas Winston couldn't even put the word Jewish in his letter, knowing that if he had, it would have been discarded immediately. So he just said that these children are forbidden schooling. Their parents are forbidden work. It wasn't hard to use one's imagination, as he said. Well, also in the archives, Langbart uncovered a chain of internal government communications about Winston's letter. According to Langbart, after the White House received Winston's letter, it referred the request to the Department of State for action. The State Department of the United States has always been a cesspool of anti-Semitism. Never changed. It still is. Shortly thereafter, the Department of State forwarded the letter to the President's Advisory Committee on Political Refugees, suggesting that organizations involved might be interested in Winston's cause. In other words, they said, we don't want to help either. Langbart also found another memo from the State Department that instructed the U.S. Embassy in London to acknowledge receipt of Mr. Winston's letter and advise him that the United States government is unable, in the absence of specific legislation, to permit integration and access of that provided by existing immigration laws, end quote. No, we don't want to save those children. Let them die. The U.S. officially denied Winston's request in a letter sent by the State Department and the U.S. Embassy in London. The official copy of that note, which Winston kept in his personal scrapbook, appeared on the 60-minute broadcast. When asked for his reaction to the U.S. response, Sir Nick's plea, Langbart shared that he had roots in Eastern Europe and had members of his family that perished in the Holocaust. Personally, I wish the United States government did more. I'm not sure that anybody fully recognized what was coming as far as the Holocaust. The United States opened its doors to the extent that the law allowed at the time. I wish it had done more, but it wasn't. That's such bull. if I can say the rest of that without violating the rules of the FCC. It is absolute bull. FDR violated virtually every article of the U.S. Constitution to become de facto dictator of the United States. And you're telling me that he was unable to modify an immigration regulation that would have allowed the United States to save tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of children? The United States didn't act because it didn't want to act, because it was grotesquely immoral at the time. That's why it didn't act. It's stunningly grotesque. It's one of those moments you just say, yeah, it's exactly what I thought. The U.S. government was absolutely aware. And not only didn't care, chose to reject those children it could have saved. Now, if you're not angry at your government, which I am, and many of you I know listen in South America and Canada and listen throughout Central America and down under in New Zealand and Australia, and therefore don't have the animosity that I have towards the American government for all of the horrible things that we have done. Yeah, I must tell you that it's this kind of thing that causes me to scream. And to a large part because I've smelled it. I've touched it. I've seen it. There is a huge benefit in having traveled in over 150 countries. I've been in the concentration camps. I've seen the mountains of ashes. I've seen the little shoes of the toddlers that went in to be massacred by the Germans. I've seen their little faces in the pictures on the wall. I've seen the collection of dresses and slacks that the victims wore. And I've been in the National Holocaust Museum in Israel and had to confront their dramatic presentation of the 1 million little children, 1 million Jewish children under the age of 5 years old, that were sacrificed needlessly. I realized the United States had the ability to save them and decided not to. It hurts. It really hurts. There's another place in this world that is hurting. It is Bangkok, Thailand. It strikes me here that we see duplicity. Back at the time that the riots began in Kiev, I drew people's attention to Bangkok, Thailand, and said, you know, the riots there, the protests in Bangkok, Thailand, are far more significant than they are in Kiev. It's just the only difference is you don't have the United States aiding and abetting the protesters, encouraging the protesters to overturn their government in Thailand, which we had in the Ukraine with the CIA and the State Department working on behalf of the anti-Semites in the Ukraine amongst the protesters to overturn their government. That's not the case in Thailand because most of the protest is over agrarian reform. It's over economic issues. Protesters do not like the economic situation that is in Thailand. But the number of dead in Thailand is far greater than the number that died in the protests in the Ukraine. A great deal more is at stake, really, in Thailand. But we don't say a word. It's only makes our newspapers if something extraordinarily dramatic happens. Well, it did today. Martial law. Bangkok, Thailand, CNN. It's tense in Thailand, where violence has spilled into the streets, causing deaths, injuries, and political instability that led to the Thai army declaring martial law Tuesday. This, by the way, is another canary in the mine. If you're living in Europe or the United States, this is your future. The U.S. military is being prepared for business, and its business is going to be against its citizens. The U.S. military is going to be deployed, just as we saw the military that the U.S. supports, in fact pays for almost entirely, in Egypt, working against its citizens. The military of the United States will work against U.S. citizens, just like the Thai military is in Bangkok. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want to share one last thought before we continue with the story out of Bangkok. Had the United States saved the lives of the little children whose feet were in those mountain of shoes that I witnessed in the concentration camps, had we saved those little tykes, that would have been a victory worth celebrating. But firebombing German cities so that the Germans could no longer propagate the war. And what is really a terrorist act is not a victory worth celebrating. Some might say, oh, yes, but we liberated the concentration camps. Yeah, that was after the damage had been done. 12 million were already dead. And most of those that we found there, we couldn't even keep alive. So when you wave the flag and you go to a national monument to the victory of World War II, you may want to think about all the little toddlers who gave up their shoes to form that memorial mountain, who could have been saved, but who weren't. Now, turning to back to Bangkok, the declaration of martial law and the imposition of the military took a lot of people by surprise. Even the prime minister said, he didn't know about it. They took this action unilaterally, said an aide to the prime minister. The person described the action as half a coup d'etat. Lieutenant General Nifat Tonglek told CNN that the move was not a coup. Well, of course not. Yeah, you know, back in Egypt, when the military not only deposed the freely elected prime minister of the Muslim Brotherhood, and when they declared the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization and illegal, when they rounded up the 1,500 most prominent leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, incarcerated them, and then sentenced them to death. No, that wasn't a coup. No, they were just restoring peace. Well, that's what they're calling this too. Oh, no, it wasn't a coup. The army aims to maintain peace, order, and public safety for all groups and for all parties. People are urged not to panic and can carry on their business as usual. The people of Thailand are all too familiar with coup d'etats. There have been 18 actual and attempted military takeovers since Thailand became a constitutional monarchy in 1932. So what are we dealing with here? You know, 80 years? In 80 years, there have been 18, you know, essentially one every 4 years. You know, it's very similar to America's propensity to war. America has fought in 101 wars since the first Europeans invaded the North American continent. 101 wars. 400 years. One every 4 years. Now, they've had a coup every 4 years, or one attempted or actual. Martial law went into effect at 3 a.m. Tuesday. The television ticker said the military is guarding all Thai TV stations. Thai public television announced showing pictures of soldiers and armed vehicles taking positions outside the broadcast facilities. We will control the media. We will tell you what is fit for you to hear. We will determine what is appropriate for you, where it's appropriate for you to go. But carry on your life as if nothing has happened. But all you can listen to is us. All you can see is us. But we're not in control. This is not a coup. Go about your business. You're getting a view of what's going to happen in America. The military has said in a statement on Thai television that it's declared all of the country's radio and television stations suspended of normal programming, and it will program what is needed to be heard. The military has established a security task force called the Peacekeeping Command Center. Oh, yes, that's what militaries do. They're peacekeepers. It's a peacekeeping command center. Yeah, try to rebel against them and see how peaceful they are. The task force has ordered officials to appear before it. Yeah. Local and international journalists formed a crowd outside of the building waiting for Peuth to speak. The news conference. All appointed parties must show up and be accounted for.